Alright, last time. Avalon's Finest left Highwatch Abbey at the direction of the bishop to go and take care of some potential problems at the Bones, a cave system nearby that stretched an unknown distance underground and seemed to pass deep into the earth, commonly known as the Bones of Baldur. But even as some of the brothers and sisters of Highwatch Abbey had gone there, along with various other refugees, including one Solas the Unicorn, they had discovered a very strong sense of necromancy, which they knew was there, but they also came upon undead, and that led to greater concerns about how many undead might be there and what might be their intentions. Who is it that was gathering such an army in such an unrecognized place? So the party was sent to go reconnect with their friend Solas and perhaps discover what's going on in the Bones of Baldur, find out what's happening with the undead that are there. And with that, you left Ari joining your group to travel with you. And as you made your way first by tree stride, and then once coming out of a tree, you made your way quickly across the open of the vaulted high mountains of the Pelagus chain down to where there was a ravine. And as you passed into this ravine through a narrow crevice in the rock, you came down to the torch-lit entrance to the Bones of Baldur. As you entered into these caves, you came to the first camp. Once you arrived there, you were told basically what was going on and allowed to view the corpses that had been discovered and dispatched quickly. More undead were believed to be deeper down, but none had been seen as of yet. However, the party did find out that Solas had made her way on, headed down the passage towards the direction where the second camp would have been, in the next large chamber, is where they're expected to be. So the party, heading out after their wayward unicorn friend, left the first camp behind and began making their way down. And as they did so, and they found Solas alone and in a place seemingly lost in the history of the Bones of Baldur, looking at cave drawings and trying to decipher their meanings and how old they might be. With Solas in tow then, or rather, chasing after her as she continued on down, the party with Solas made their way down, following the passage, well lit as it was, until they came to the next cavern. An open cavern seemed to widen out and the ceiling lift away. You can hear the sound of water running, a subterranean river. And you can see the deep shadows of this cavern seem to be lit by some kind of phosphorescence, a bluish green light spreading here and there around the room, around the space. But as you look in, you can see one thing that stands out to you. You can see a very sturdy, very old looking stone bridge crossing over some kind of a chasm in the center of the room. And what do you do? Yes, but as she came to the mouth of this room, where the passage opened up into this room, she paused just to take it all in, and so you would have gathered up there. You would have noticed that there were lights that were spread every so often down this passage that you have gone on, and you would notice that lights have been set and left every so often, moving out into this room and making their way down to the bridge. And you can even see some of the same torches or signal fires that have been left burning on the other side, trying to mark a path of some sort. I'm pretty sure those are from us. They would have left them to mark the path down to the next camp. But I think there's only one more down there. That's what they said at the first camp. There's just one more camp deeper down. So I imagine they're to mark the path to get to that camp. It does not have guardrails. However, it is fairly wide. It looks like it's wide enough that you could easily drive a cart over it. All right. It is still probably about 80 feet away from you guys. The path moves into this large room. But if you want to throw a rock from here, you can try. All right, you look around and you find such a rock. It looks like there, most of the rocks in here. Actually, go ahead and give me either nature or dungeoneering check. Hey, there's a bunch of rocks all around you. Randy, what is your dungeoneering? Okay, Randy, Barkus is looking around. He's fumbling through the bits of rock that are here and there. Looking for a good one. You can see him testing the weight, kind of tossing them up and down. But there's something you notice about all of these rocks. They appear to be very well rounded and smoothed, much like river rock, or rock that has been smoothed underwater. It would appear that the bridge has also been smoothed. Its sharp corners that you imagine it would have at one time had have been smoothed and rounded. While you can still see some very fine artistry in the way that the bridge was crafted, you don't actually recognize it from any of the cultures that you're aware of. This bridge is not like anything that you would see on the surface. It has a very old feel to it, but it does appear to have seen and experienced the test of time. It also looks like it might be a little bit slick. The bridge is about 50 feet long and crosses over this gulf, this chasm. Do you approach the chasm to gauge its depth? All right, go for it. All right, so one of you can assist the other then. So either way, it's plenty. You look over the space, and from what you can see, you do not see any immediate threats or dangers. You do catch sight of, it looks like the water level has risen above where you're standing in this room. So it would appear that during high water time, whatever time that may be, this entire area can be flooded. Not from above. So this would probably have more to do with a swelling coming from the river, which you have yet to see. However, you do notice up towards the ceiling, up kind of high in the walls, there are some smaller openings, small mouths that seem to lead into small tunnels, maybe only 4 or 5 feet across. And you notice around a few of these that there are evidences of bits of web and things like that. Yes, evidences of webbing, like spider webbing. There are plenty of large, flat stones. There's several large boulders here, and several of them are relatively flat across the top. How big of a boulder do you want? Probably about 100 pounds. You could spider climb across. I believe that gives you spider climb for a number of rounds, correct? There is, you would estimate, is probably about 60 feet up to get to the top. Okay, so you make your way down to the edge of the chasm so that you can look into it. And as you approach, it seems to drop down, and it's very dark down in there. But you can hear a strong sound of rushing water. And as you get close enough to the edge, go all the way to the edge. Okay, and so with fly activated, feeling a little more confident in your abilities, you move up to the edge and look down and let your orb of light from the Dancing Light spell drop down into the water. And what is the range on Dancing Lights? Okay, your ball of light, so it could go down pretty far. Your ball of light only has to go down about 15 feet, though, before it strikes the water. And since it is a magical ball of light, it remains still, but you can see the water seems to be rushing pretty quickly. Make a roll for it. All right, now go ahead and just give me a strength check. Just for distance. All right, the stone flies true and clatters across the surface of the bridge before dropping off the other side of it. She would have stayed back with you guys, but when you moved up closer to investigate the bridge, she's also moved up. And as you look over, she's over pretty close to the bridge. She seems to be taking in its architecture, particularly. So, but you notice, even as you watch her, that she unfolds her black feathery wings and just lightly steps off over the edge of the chasm and flaps down a little bit as she seems to be looking at the bridge. Yeah, you can see it. There's a basically this whole room is in low light. It is a very old bridge. This architecture is not Cortholian, nor is it Catan. If I had to guess, it may be before the Cataclysm. Yes, I have not seen a bridge like this, not in the West. I see here,
and she directs you to some of the various cuts and designs that are set into the reinforcements and the arches underneath that support the bridge and kind of disperse the weight back to either side.
It says, you see, these are not Cortholian, and the language, while similar, appears to be far older. I am not familiar with this language, and unfortunately I do not have a spell to help with that today.
And as you look, you can see that there seems to be writing that is ornately scribed around the arches that support the bridge. It appears to be, and if you move under the bridge, you would find that there is more under the bridge as well. Alright, as you look at it, it is similar in some ways to Cortholian, but it is different, and you can't make out the words. The letters are shaped differently, and they don't seem to flow in the same direction. However, you notice some similarities with Old Bashani. Not that it's the same language, but almost like languages of the same era. Okay. And you begin copying it down. Go ahead and give me another linguistics check, just to see how well you can copy down symbols that you're not that familiar with. Okay. You feel like you've done a pretty good job. Okay. Solas seems like she could spend hours just poring over this bridge, but realizes that you guys are ready to move on, and so tears herself away. Ari, on the other hand, while all this is going on, he's kind of standing over close to Randy, and he's like, "Hey, Randy, you've got some really interesting friends. I mean, it's just a bridge." "Well, I guess that's important, you know, but you know, don't we have better things to be doing?" "All right, it shouldn't be too much further past the bridge. Should get down to the main chamber. That's where the second camp is at, and that's as far as anybody's got. At least that's what they told me." "Well, I guess we'll find out when we get there. The first camp that we got to, that's where the refugees, and that was kind of the safety camp. But the second camp was set up, I guess, in response to finding out there were undead here. So it's a little bit more of a scout camp. So I don't know if they found anything else from there. It's kind of keeping the rest of this area clear, you know?" "When we were at the base camp up in the top, they said the last word that they got was about 18 hours ago." Yeah, and as you guys make your way now, you have a little ways to walk through this cavern. Leaving the river behind you, but still, the room shows many, many signs of being flooded multiple times. And then you also notice there's still more of these holes, bits of webbing here and there, but it looks like it's pretty torn up. It doesn't look like it's really fresh. It doesn't look like it gets flooded. Like, you don't find puddles of water, and the rocks are not particularly wet unless they're close to where the river is at. And most of that's just from the splash and the water that's in the air directly around the river. So you don't think it's been flooded in some time. It's probably more of a annual or semi-annual thing. Something to do with the melting of the snow. "Oh, it's definitely scheduled. Well, if they follow general protocol, then it'd be every 15 hours. Every 12 to 15 hours, so they're overdue." Go ahead and do a survival check. Okay. You see several tracks. They all look to be humanoid, and most of them are moving down along this trail. It looks like probably a group of maybe 12 or so, 12 to 15, that had moved down this way. So you don't really see too many tracks that look like they're coming back up. As you come to the end of this cavern, you see another opening. This one has a single torch that has been shoved into some of the rock. The torch is still burning, but you can tell it's probably about half burned at this point. As you make your way down, the torches become further and further apart, as they probably were starting to run low on lights for the initial lighting of their path. Perhaps the plan is later to come and reinforce this and kind of secure this more permanently. But as you go, I'd like to know who is leading this up and have them go ahead and give me a survival check. All right. So, who will give me that survival check? Okay. As you are making your way down this passage, you do notice a couple of offshoot passages on the right. They seem to shoot off into just pitch black darkness. Large enough for a person to walk through, even a small group of people. They seem, one of them especially, is as big as the passage that you are in now, breaks away and heads off in that direction. Further on, provided that you don't do anything with those passages, you keep making your way. You come to a place where the passage forks, and again, if you follow the spread out torches and signal fires, you would find yourself coming within sight of a gathering of light. Those that have magic would recognize that this is magical light that has been cast here, and it is a second base camp. However, let me go ahead and get Ruka. Go ahead and give me a knowledge religion check. All right. As you're going along, you passed that one passage that was particularly large, about the same as the one that you're in, that could definitely go someplace. And you felt a strange pull. Not like something was beckoning you, but like something was watching. But it was just brief, and then it was gone. But now, you see before you the second base camp. It's a little ways down this path, and as you near it, you find that you come out of this tunnel that you've been walking in into a into a incredibly massive cavern that seems to stretch away to the sides into darkness, and it stretches up into darkness. And there's only the path before you, lit dimly by torches, and as you get closer, magical light that seems to glow at about 100-foot radius from its center. As you look around, you can see mountainous stalagmites. You can see piles of boulders. The path that you walk itself seems to cut down and around and through the broken rocks that litter the floor of this vast room until you come to a somewhat high point in the room, or at least of what you can see, and that is where the second base camp is at. You can see there are other people there, and as you near them, you notice that they are all wearing the dark robes of the Shadow of Light. Okay, you do not. They are not an illusion. You do detect magic there. You can detect several things, and ultimately you would discover that, one, there seems to be multiple castings of the light spell, as well as protection from evil and magic circle against evil. Beyond that, inside you can see a ramshackle of tents, and you can see, about 15 people as you approach. They definitely notice you, and Ari motions, and he kind of goes to the front and speaks up to them. Says, it's all right, we're friends. We've come down from High Watch. And one of them calls back and says, you've come down from High Watch. All right then. What's the code? To which Ari immediately spouts off a seemingly random set of letters and numbers. And not all Korthalian. Just a mix of multiple languages. He kind of looks back at you guys, wondering if he should have said it in front of you, but really there's no other way around it at this point. He seems to accept the code and says, all right,
Come on in, quick. And with that, the guard looks around warily again until you guys come into the circle of light. It is a difficult code to just memorize. It is 27 characters long. And it's 27 characters long, and it spans three different languages. So it is a pretty intense code. But if you would like to do a linguistics check to see if you have the linguistical capability of grabbing this code and memorizing it, I will let you do that. The languages would be Elvish, Dwarvish, and Korthalian. Okay, then you are familiar with all three sets of characters. Okay, it takes a lot of attention and focus, but you're pretty sure you got it. And you're just, for a minute there, you're back there kind of squinting your eyes and thinking through it and repeating it over and over and over in your head to try to memorize it. All right, you guys are ushered into the second camp. As you come in, there's a dwarf who sees you. And she eyes you up and down. Kind of, you know, looks around at those that are there and says,
"Well, we do not get that many from the top camp down here. What have you come for?"
Ari will speak up and say,
"We came down to check in on you. They said it's been 18 hours since you checked in."
To which she scoffs a little bit and says,
"18 hours?
That is impossible.
We just checked in again, only about an hour and a half ago."
"What are you talking about?"
"Well, they said that they hadn't received anything from you."
"What do you mean you checked in? I mean,
did you actually talk to anyone?"
"Well, no. I mean, we sent the information, but the sending only works one way."
"Yeah, well, we are pretty far down in this place. How big is this room, anyway?"
And the dwarf looks around, shrugs, says,
"It is very large, that is true. We haven't been able to really look around. Something's out here. We put the wards up and the protections, but something is out here."
"According to standard protocol,
We use descending spells. Send up to base camp. We have a contact in the base camp. We send it through them. Well, normally there would be, but no, we have not heard anything like that back. It's not always done. So, it was not a reason for concern. Besides, we have other things to worry about down here. Yes, well, as long as you're here, perhaps you can help us. As it stands, and she motions you over to where there's a open space on the ground, and she kind of kneels down and with a gloved hand just starts to draw out a small section and says, this is where we are, and this over here is the entrance that we came through. I suppose you followed the same path. Did you follow the torches? Yeah, we followed the torches. Some of them don't look like they're gonna burn that much longer anyway. She nods and says, alright, well, that will make this a bit harder. But when we came down, we saw evidence of more undead in the area. But whatever this presence that is here, it is simply watching, but it is dangerous. I think whoever it is that is harboring them knows that we are here. Yes, well, that is why we've put so much work into the protections. So they should not actually be able to come in. And if they do, then we will deal with them. As the Shadow of Light deals with all threats. We are committed to our jobs. This is our responsibility. Well, I don't know about water. I suppose all of this, she looks around. These do look like the rocks have been worn down quite a bit. Perhaps this area floods too. But I am not a scientist. That is not my job. We have a researcher. Paul. And she calls over, and you see an elf stand up. And he's got his hair is cut back very short, and you can see some, looks like some tattooing on his scalp and kind of on his neck. But he comes over. Yeah. Do you have cold? They are asking about the rocks, and think we might get flooded out. Is that a concern?
Well, the rocks are water rocks. They definitely show signs of water, but it does not seem to have been recent. I would expect it is something that happens regularly, but not that often. Do you know something different?
And he kind of looks to all of you.
Well, if it was natural, then I would say it would happen in the early spring, when the mountain snows start to thaw, and this underground tributary probably flows into the Nur at some point, and most likely it comes from there. So it is not spring. It is now just in the winter, so I would say that we have some time yet before that is a problem. Although, that would be a problem if we wanted to set up a permanent camp. I should have to think about this. It is one of my goals to study this place more thoroughly. But if this is going to flood like that, that's a good insight. I'll have to think about that. Yeah, but we would have to find out how high the water gets in here, and it would rise a certain amount, at least to cover the entrance that we came in. But perhaps it would leave a pocket in the top. There is a chance for that. But we would have to find the walls first. And aside from the back wall that the entrance is in, we have yet to find the walls. Not into caves, no. As far as I know, there is no dragons in the cave. Although we know there is undead. And that could be Makat's doing, or one of his, but we have not found any signs of dragons.
There's plenty of dragons in this area, and it's also quite possible for a fire-breathing dragon to melt water and potentially in enough quantity to cause flooding.
Everyone who is here because we are able to defend ourselves. Even Paul can defend himself.
To which Paul just kind of stands up and gets a grin on his face. It's a soldier's grin. He says,
yeah, that is true. Everyone here is volunteered for the job. We know the risks.
And Paul looks over to the dwarf, and she looks like she really doesn't want to. Because if we leave this place, then the front line falls back, and the undead will get closer to the main camp. That is not something that I want to do lightly.
Solas speaks up and says, I could speak with someone if they're asleep.
All right, let's see, underground. You are probably a good half mile or so underground. Like, straight down. There is a underdark of a sort, yes.
Well, yeah. We do shifts, but I mean, what do you mean? Oh, sure, yeah.
Let me think. All right. And he thinks about it and then tells Solas, okay, here's a few people you could try. And he gives her the names. And they're various people that work at High Watch. Solas will pause for a moment and bow her head a little bit as she focuses in on herself. And Randy, this is the first time you've seen it from her perspective. But it just seems like she seems to meditate. But there seems to be a look of peace on her face as she, eyes still closed, just begins to breathe deeply, just standing there, just breathing deeply, almost like the breathing of sleep. But then there's a moment where there's kind of this irritated twitch in the eye. And then she refocuses, and that happens a few more times before she opens her eyes and looks around and says, I have tried, but either they are not sleeping, or I cannot communicate with them. Yeah, go for it. All right, you know that it is possible to jam communications that way. There are drastic means, such as anti-magic fields, but there are other ways that you can do it as well. And sometimes communication is simply messed with by the environment that you are in. Yes, we were able to, well, they said that they received the message, correct? And Ari speaks up and says, yeah, they said that the last time they heard from you was 18 hours ago. So, 18 hours ago, that would put us, we were on patrol. That was before whatever it is showed up. But we were looking to see if we could map some of the space. We'd gone back by the entrance to see if we could follow the wall from there and sent our message then. It was only about an hour after that, however, that we all felt this strong sense of being watched and something lurking. Perhaps we could send a message back by the entrance. Perhaps that area is not blocked.
We will do that. All right. I will need four. I need four to come with me. Will you all stay here then?
There's only one opening you know of. However, you do not know where three of the walls are. You don't know how wide, how tall, or how deep this cavern is. You have stepped into a space that is so big that you do not know its dimensions. You can look back and you can see the line of torches that goes back to the opening. That is the only thing that makes any break in this sea of blackness around you. The light spell from where you're at, the multiple castings of it, has done much to light up this area about 200 feet diameter around the camp. But beyond that is blackness. I don't know. I mean, you're right. I don't really know what's past this point. We know there's undead down here, but the only ones they found are the ones up at the top. And Solas will look at both of you and say, "Can you not see in the dark?" "Then you do not see that." And she points out into the dark a ways. And anyone with dark vision, I can go ahead and make a perception check. Okay. You can see moving over a pile of rock beyond the edge of the light, where the dark begins, probably about 40 feet into the darkness. You can see what looks to be a very large spider. However, it appears to be natural. We are talking huge in size. No. The light goes out about 100 feet. And then it is about 40 feet beyond that in the dark. So my understanding of dark vision and various levels of light is that that is how much you can see into that level of light. So it would make sense that you can see everything that's in the light. Everyone can see that 100 feet of light. But when you hit that wall of darkness, only those with dark vision can penetrate it to some distance. So it's about 140 feet out. And Solas is looking at it just like she can see it. At the call for archers, you see about half a dozen of the Shadow of Light guards step forward, these agents of the Shadow, and they do not pull out bows, but you see as they open their palms, they begin to glow with various manifestations of magic. As they say, we don't have bows and arrows down here, but I think we can hold our own. And Solas we'll look at it again, and Min, you can see it. It seems to be moving around the edge of the light, seems to be working its way back around, actually towards the entrance that you came in at. But the longer you look at it, you can make out that there are other shapes moving. They don't seem to be as big, but there do seem to be other shapes moving in the dark as well. To which Paul looks over and kind of looks around at the others and says,
well, we have come down here to take care of that, the threats. This sounds like a threat. I say light it up.
Yeah, there's 15 of them down here. You see the 6 of them that step forward and seem to have magic at their disposal, but you see others that appear to be wearing heavier armor. They bear axes, hammers, spears, things of that nature. There's probably about 8 of them that you can see that appear to be martial in training.
Yes, you do.
Okay, excellent. Let's go ahead and roll initiative. All right, what was Barkus? And what was Min? Okay, thank you. And Randy, what was yours? And Philia, what is yours? All right, Barkus, you go first. And I will say that we will kind of kick off the initiative as the lights get turned on and you see the spiders kind of reflexively draw back away from the sudden light that is on top of them. And you can see about 8 spiders currently. The small ones, by the way, they're not huge. The small ones are only about 10 feet across. So, there you go. And they would count as large. So, Barkus, it's up to you.
Are the small ones?
The small ones are kind of spread around it, mostly in front. They seem to be scurrying forward, maybe a little bit faster than the big one. At least currently, and they seem to be making their way around the perimeter of the light, so they're a little bit more stretched up to the side. Yes. You can move 30 feet and still attack. That is it. Well, I should ask, are you shooting at the big one or the smaller ones? Okay, that's a hit. I believe it adds to the damage. As long as you have that strength mod, you can add that to your damage as well. You move, so you get one shot. Okay, that brings us to Min. Okay, sounds good. That brings us to them. The Barkus fires his shot, the arrow flies true, and pierces into the abdomen of the large spider. And as it does, there's a hiss and a kind of a shrieking cry. And you can see out of its mouth bits of mucus and phlegm. As the spider, you know, turns and backs up, the spider seems to fix its eyes on where the arrow came from, and it is going to move to charge you guys. So its speed. All right, it is going to go ahead and do a full round action. To move 120 feet as the spider, which moves easily over this rough terrain, very easily makes its way and is now right in front of Barkus. Yeah, it is pretty much right on top of Barkus. So, and its mandibles are open, it's still spitting and hissing as it nears, and as it nears, its long legs seem to almost, you know, punch holes in the rock as it comes close, you know, kicking up bits of gravel and dirt as it rushes forward. The smaller spiders are going to move likewise, and they are going to rush in, kind of reaching around the right flank. And they're going to use their move action to close distance with the group. So they all end about 30 feet away from everybody. And that will bring us to the next. That brings us to Ruka. Ruka, Cabal is standing nearby. She looks maybe a little scared, but she wouldn't admit it. And she just looks at you and nods her head with a Okay, so you hold your action. The spiders are only about 30 feet away at this point and rushing head on. Randy, it is your turn. So far, none of them seem to have noticed you. Okay, sounds good. Get that plus 20. It's pretty much right on top of Barkus. It moved 120 feet forward. Barkus had to be within 110 feet to shoot it. So it basically rushed up on him and almost like kind of overran him and, you know, spun around. It's not a perfect flanking, but it's kind of on his side. Barkus moved up 30 feet. So you could move 20 feet, I think. Okay, you move up 20 feet. You are about 10 feet away. You already used a standard action to cast True Strike, so that is your action. All right, Philia, it is your turn. Yes. So Min had cast Dancing Lights over the spiders, and then they proceeded to charge in. So now they're about 30 feet away. All right, shooting at the big one.
Yeah.
All right, a 14 misses. It would hit, but it deflects off of its thick hide. And that is a hit. Okay, a 16 does not hit, but one did hit, so go ahead and roll damage.
Okay, awesome. Okay, that's a hit. All right. So you take your first shot and it gets deflected off in the thick hide. The second shot you bring true and it seems to sink in deeply. The third shot, the spider whips around and it just misses going high. But the next shot you bring up and again are able to send it home. As more and more arrows are starting to plug into this monstrous spider, we move back to Barkus in the initiative. Oh, I should say, as this is going on, you do see the Shadow of Light agents move into action. They sweep out a little bit to the right. You can see that the dwarf, who seems to be leading them, she heads on with her group of four, and they seem like they're making a bit of a break for it in the moment to see if they can go and make contact, whereas the others sweep out on the flanks to try to make sure that you guys don't get overrun by the spiders. Barkus, it is your turn. No, unfortunately you cannot. Haste only affects melee. Also, if you're going to change weapons, the spider does get an attack of opportunity for that. All right, does a 31, as it launches itself forward and bites into you. All right, you take 20 points of damage as it crunches into you with its teeth. And I need you to make a fortitude save. Okay. You can feel the ice cold of the venom in the bite. It's almost like it's numbing already. Like you feel the pressure from its jaws crunching down on you as it seems to have bit down on your shoulder. But you almost don't feel the pain, and that's a little scarier than actually feeling that pain. But so far, it doesn't seem to be affecting you. Go ahead and take your turn. That is a hit. Correct. Okay, that's a good hit. All right, I think in Pathfinder you always use the strength mod for damage, unless you have the weapon finesse feat, and even then I think it only applies to the attack. Okay, excellent. As you cut into the spider, it seems to be getting bloody at this point. So good job. Min, it is your turn. Technically, he had to draw his weapons, which I believe is a move action. So it's not a full attack action. So we'll go to Min on this one. You can see three of them that seem to be pretty close to you guys particularly. The two more seem to be closer to some of the Shadow of Light agents, and then two of them seem to have gone after the group that is trying to break away. Oh, they're 30 feet away. Okay, that brings us to the spiders, and we will start with the big one, as it is going to attack back in a fevered rage as it attempts to bite Barkus, and that is a 28 to hit. That is 15 points of damage, and I need you to go ahead and make another constitution save. Yes, 15. Fortitude save. 15 points of damage, and make that fortitude save. Okay. You take 6 points of strength damage.
All right, and then the other spiders are going to move up. The three that are close to you guys are going to... Well, let me deal with the others first, actually. So the two approach the Shadow of Light. And they begin fighting with them down below. You can see flashes of magic and light and fire mixed with the hisses and screams of the spiders, as well as a couple times the screams and the painful cries of those who have been bit by the spiders. However, for you guys, there are three. One of them is going to come straight up to attack Ruka. All right. Uh, 15 for the smaller ones does not, unfortunately. It's rather close, but it does not. And does a 24 hit you? All right, take 11 points of damage, and I need a fortitude save. Okay, very good. The next one is going to come up and is going to attempt to attack Cabal. And that is not very good. So that is only a 16, which does not hit Cabal. So the next one is going to come up and is going to attempt to attack... it's going to attempt to attack Solas. That natural 4 actually still hits Solas. So let me roll some damage. Alright. And she has to make Fortitude. Which she does. Alright, so one of them comes up and does bite Solas on the leg, to which she cries out and falls back a little bit, kicks out at it, but does not seem to be the worst for the poison of the bite. Ruka, it is now your turn. Okay, very good. And then that brings us to Randy. Yeah, you spot Ari pretty quick. He seems to be tending to one of the Shadow of Light guys that fell. By the look of it, casting a spell. Correct. Okay. Go ahead and give me that acrobatics check. Unfortunately, there is a feat that allows you to do something like that, and without it, you can't do it.
Okay, 31, yeah, you're able to pull it off. You slide between Barkus's feet even as he is dodging back and preparing to swing again, and you slide right underneath the spider. Correct. That is a hit. All right, then. Very nice. So you slide up under and just punch your dagger straight up into it, catching it in the soft underbelly. And there is a gout of blackish blood that just drops on top of you. And the spider seems to tremble as it cries out. All right, Philia, it is your turn. Okay, very good. And is that something that you can cast on multiple people, or is that just on yourself? Okay. All right, Barkus, it's back to you. You can see the fighting going on around you. There appears to be a wall of fire that the ones that were trying to make a break for it have put up. They seem to have caught one of the spiders in it and burned it quite severely. The other one is still being dealt with. What would you like to do? Oh, well, he let go of you. And, yeah, he let go of you, so you're not grappled by him. Yeah, he looks to be in bad shape. Okay, that's a hit. That is a hit.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. That's fine. That is also a hit. All right, this big spider appears to be in very bad shape, as one of your blows completely cut off one of its mandibles. Your hand axe sunk into one of its legs, like you might sink it into a stump, except blood oozed out, and it seems to, that leg seems to not be working right anymore. It seems to be in really bad shape between you and the arrows and then what Randy just did. It's not doing so hot. All right, Min, it is your turn. Okay, and how would you like to do this? All right, and as you cut. Oof, yes, you are. Yeah, technically it would break when you had attacked. But Barkus did not see you attack because you attacked from under the spider. So I would say he still doesn't know that you're doing an oil change under the car. So yeah, go ahead and make your reflex save. Okay, good deal. You are able to realize there's suddenly a flash of light overhead, and then you see that light come down through the various legs, and you realize what's about to happen. And as you quick and just roll out through the back, the body comes crashing down right where you were at. Several hundred pounds of dead spider weight drops on the ground right where you had been just moments before. And that is Min's turn. So Min moved, Min attacked. I believe that brings us to the end of Min's turn. Which, all right, so it's the spiders. You've got the three that you're fighting right now. So they're going to go ahead and continue with what they're doing. All right. First one attacked Ruka with a 28 to hit. Correct. Okay, in that case, the spider is going to attempt to attack one of them with that attack roll. So that would be a 28 to hit. Well, if they took up defensive positions, I thought that you meant by that that they weren't immediately attacking. Okay. So yes, they can go ahead and attack the spider. That's fine. Yes, it does. All right. Yes, it does. All right. Correct. All right. This one is looking pretty bad. It does not. Okay. All right, as they strike out, the spider is going to attack the first one, and he will do 7 points of damage. And can this target be poisoned? Okay, then I need a fortitude save. Okay, very good. All right, then the second one is going to attack. This spider went after Cabal, and this time manages to hit Cabal as Cabal moved back, but it lunges forward to go after her again. Right, and as it bites into her, she wrenches her arm free, but she's going to have to go ahead and make a save. Alright. And as she gets bit by the spider, she wrenches free, but immediately grabs her arm and hisses through her teeth from the pain as she looks down, and she can feel the poison beginning to do its work as she failed her save against the venom. The next one attacks Solas, and that was a 28 also. right, as Solas takes maximum damage from it, but she does pass her save to resist the poison, and she gets bit again. And this time Solas is going to disengage, and she just flies up into the air to get away from it. But you can tell that her leg has been bitten pretty bad. That brings us to Ruka. Yeah, I think that's probably best, considering that's when they were summoned. All right, Randy, your turn. About 20 feet away. Yes, it is currently trying to kill Cabal. Yes, you would. That's a hit. Roll damage. Twenty-five points of damage. All right, very nice. Spider looks to be in bad shape. All right, do you want to move as well? No, you can stealth as a move action. All right, go ahead and give me your stealth. Okay, awesome. Philia, you are up.
Okay, and a 30 does hit. Roll damage. Okay. 12 does not hit.
Thirty-one does hit. All right. A 28 does hit. All right, and as you fire that last arrow, it catches the spider and it drops still to the ground. There is one spider down. It was the one that was attacking Solas, so there's still the one that was attacking Cabal. And then there is also the one that was attacking Ruka. And that then brings us back. The battlefield moves around you. You can see a couple of the other spiders are definitely dead. The ones that were caught in the firewall have been burned to death. Then over on the other side, you can see where one of them has been beaten down by two of the warriors, one with the hammer, one with the axe, that just mutilated it until it stopped moving. You look around, there's probably only four spiders that are left at this point, and two of those are threatening you guys. So, Barkus, it's up to you. Correct. Yes, there are two that are threatening you guys. All right, you will have to move to get to it, but you can certainly do that. It means that you'll have one attack. So if you move, then you don't get any extra attacks. You only get extra attacks if you do a full round attack. Okay, go ahead and make your attack roll. That's a hit. Okay, 12 points of damage as you come up, and this is with the battle axe. All right, and you come to the one that has been trying to get through Ruka's wall of warriors, and as you bring your axe down on its back, you just cleave it nearly in two, and it drops suddenly. Min, it is your turn. Oh,
Real quick, point of business. Barkus, I need you to make another fortitude save. Barkus? Go ahead and make a fortitude save. Okay, you're fine. You're fine. All right, Min, go ahead. Okay, and that one also drops still to the ground. And as you look around, you see the last two spiders dispatched, one with a flame blast, and another one is dispatched with the blow of a heavy greatsword from one of the agents. And as the space grows quiet around you, you see, you look back, there's a quick recognition with Paul as he recognizes what you've done and gives you just a brief nod of a thanks before looking back out to where the small group that was going to try to make contact, and he gives them a nod and a quick salute, and they turn and they head away, leaving you guys at base camp number 2 in the Bones of Baldur. Yes. Come over here and let me see what it is. And Paul motions you to come over. I am a doctor, after all. Let me see what I can find. Yes, you've been bit rather badly. Let me see what I have. And he is going to pull out a case and start going through some various files and stuff. Ultimately, he does pull out a vial that contains a lesser restoration spell in it, or its equivalent, and he will give it to you, which I believe will heal your attribute damage. And after, while he is doing this, the rest of you have a chance to collect your thoughts, to reconnect. But we will have to cover all of that next time. Well, good job, guys. I was a little concerned about how it was going to go at one point, but you did good.